Hello, friends, and welcome to another podcast episode of the Connection Podcast by Connect Global. My name is Travis Moffitt, and I'm one of the co-founders here at Connect Global. And I'm so excited because today I have the opportunity to spend some time with fellow co-founders Javier and Danielle Mendoza. You know, at Connect Global, we say that we exist to share the good news of Jesus around the world and help others do the same. And Javier and Danielle really exemplify this mission statement of Connect Global in their whole lives. So I'm always so excited to have the opportunity to spend time with them and get to talk with them. And I'm excited that you're joining us today to listen in on this conversation. Javier and Danielle, how are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. Thank you very much. We appreciate everybody watching and or listening in. We appreciate your support. We feel your prayers. We are excited about some of the cool announcements, some of the things that have been happening, things that are going on, and all of which could not be done without all of you. So we really, truly do appreciate you. It's your generosity that continues to grow this organization and continues to allow us to do what we do. So we're blessed and we are doing very, very well.
Yeah, we're doing well. How are you?
I'm good. We're enjoying, like you said, just the great things that God is doing through Connect Global and through our families. You know, it's a joy in this organization that we're also family and friends and co-founders. And so we share a lot of relational connections. And I think that makes it really, really nice. You know, I know that our families always enjoy the opportunity to spend time together. And right now we're physically separated. So Gina and Noah and I are here in the United States and you guys are back in your home in Honduras. So that's very exciting because I know through quarantine and shutdown and travel restrictions and things like that, you guys were out of your home. So help us, let's catch up all of our listeners or viewers, whether you're watching this on Vimeo or YouTube or Facebook, or you're listening to this on a podcasting platform. Javier and Danielle, why don't you guys help us with the timeline a little bit? So when did you guys get back to Honduras? How long were you in the United States from when you had originally moved? You guys moved to Honduras in February of 2020. Pick us up from there. What happened from there that brought you back to the US and then now has you back in Honduras?
Yeah. Go ahead.
So that was really cool because last year, of course, we had made the plans and had strategically felt like God was bringing us back to Honduras. We had first moved here in 2015, as I think many of you may remember. But we knew that God had plans to increase some of the work that we're doing here, to expand some of the programs and some of the initiatives that we had started even before 2015. So we've been working in Honduras for almost 17 years. My first trip here was in 2004. And so we've just been building upon that. Each of our projects, each of the new initiatives that we've started, it's almost like building blocks, one on top of another. So when we decided last year, actually in 2019, to move back in 2020, we had a great plan. We had many things that were on the horizon. A few things that we'll talk about today on this call, the School of Missions, growing our education scholarship, also our work at the hospital. Many of you know about the maternity home project there, so we'll give you a really great update on that. But all of those things, we knew, hey, this was the time to expand, and 2020 was going to be the year for that. I think many of us came into 2020 very excited and very sort of just ready to really grow and really experience all that that year had for us. And then as all of us remember, February and into March of last year, the entire globe was affected by this pandemic. Last year due to COVID-19 and due to this pandemic. And of course we were no exception. Connect Global definitely felt the effects of this worldwide global pandemic. But we did the best we could. We have a lot of you watching and listening right now, generously gave throughout the entire time that we were here working very diligently, trying to make sure that resources could get into the hands of those who needed them most, and also using the networks that we'd been building over 16 years to make sure that we were distributing food and needed resources in the proper way. But none of you faltered. That's a big blessing to us, is that many of our friends and many of our family members and many of the supporters that have been coming along this journey really stepped up and really made it possible for us not only to meet physical needs and tangible needs here in the city, but we were also able to meet very many various spiritual needs. We were out preaching as best we could and as many times as we could, out speaking and sharing the love of Jesus anywhere that we could. When the social distancing limitations came into play, and even in our city here in La Ceiba, we worked well within those restraints. We did as best we could to maneuver these new restrictions, these new hindrances that came into place. But that's so cool, is that even within the margins of those new restrictions that we've never experienced before, God was able to use us in such a mighty and crazy way. I mean, we were out delivering groceries and food and water and just a myriad of different things that people were literally struggling for. People were prevented from going to work. Public transportation was closed. Many businesses had to shut down and even close permanently. We all felt the results, and we all felt the effects of this pandemic. So during the pandemic, in the middle of us working and trying to distribute food and water and other resources here in La Ceiba, our visa was also running out. So we had a time period in which we had to travel back to the United States or travel out of the country just to reset our time here. And so we packed a suitcase for a week to be able to go back to the United States, reset our visa time period, and be able to come back to continue working and doing the things that we were already doing. And so we were displaced ourselves. So really the pandemic and some of the other travel restrictions due to COVID really just kept us from our home, kept us from returning back immediately. And then of course we had, during the course of that time, we experienced two hurricanes. I think that we had within 2 weeks, within literally 10 days, two major hurricanes hit our coast right where our home is here in La Ceiba, totally devastated parts of the country. And so part of the reason why we couldn't come back at one point was literally our airport was underwater, like feet and feet above, head of, heads and shoulder above. And so we, of course, had to wait. We had to kind of continue to have our return plan stalled. But the cool thing is that, of course, our team here that we've been building over 16, 17 years almost, never faltered. They never quit. They continue to meet the needs of the community. And so that was such a blessing to be able to see that Connect Global, because of your generosity and because of the diligence of our team here, we never missed a beat. We never missed one chance or one opportunity to go and share the love of Jesus with someone. And to me, that's a huge blessing. That's a huge testament to not only your commitment to what we're doing, but also, of course, the diligence of everyone that's involved with Connect Global, because God really moved and really answered some prayers through our efforts, and that was a really great thing to see. This year, 2020 and into 2021, literally has been one of the best years Connect Global's ever had. We've impacted more people. We've been able to invest and donate so much into churches, into the local hospital, into schools, and even into some local businesses here in Honduras because of your generosity and because every step of the way you've stayed committed to this mission and to this vision. And it's really a great testament to what God can do when people work together. So it's really been cool. I mean, it's been an exciting time. We got back to Honduras this year, just about the end of January. So we've been here just a little bit over a month, and so much has happened. So that's why we wanted to jump on this phone call and talk through some of that, because we literally haven't had a minute to text most of you. And so we wanted to get a really official kind of update to share some of the really great things that God's doing, some of the expansion on some of our projects that we've started many years ago that are really coming into fruition, and share, of course, about the maternity home. Many of you have given, and many of you have even been into the maternity home. And so I wanna share some things specifically about that, and really just talk to you a little bit more about the future and some of the plans that we have, because we are growing, we're expanding, and God has really used the last 12 to 18 months through Connect Global to expand even our own vision, give us the courage and the audacity to pray for things that we may not have ever even prayed before. And so we're praying right now, even for things that we've stepped out in faith in, to really work out, for God to really come through in some things. And already in the first, you know, couple of months of this year, we've already seen some very huge successes. We've already seen some great advances. And so we're really excited to share a lot of that with you today.
That's awesome. I think sometimes the personal work in your soul can get lost a little bit in the story. And I really want to clarify this on that timeline. You guys had sold your home. Y'all had lived in Honduras in 2015, and then were living in Dallas, sold your home and moved into your new home in Honduras.
Yes.
And I remember Gina, Noah, and I being there with you guys the first 2 weeks of February 2020. And we went home on Valentine's Day on February 14th. And 30 days later, you're in a quarantine in Honduras.
Yeah.
And you guys were there, like you mentioned, Javier, because of the legal permissions, were able to get a permission from the police. So while the nation was quarantined, you could get out. And we'll talk about the specific care that Connect Global has been able to provide for people through the COVID-19 quarantine. And then early June, you guys were coming back to the United States for a week or two, and then you're displaced from your home. So I want to make that real clear, because you were in the United States, which is, you know, your home country, but right. Your home, your house is now in another country.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you are displaced with a week of clothes for about 8 months.
Yeah.
7-8 months. You know, that's a pretty huge upheaval, because you're keeping the home in Honduras displaced here, and then now back in your home. How describe for us a little bit, we get the story.
Yeah.
But how does it feel? How does that feel going through that sort of a process?
Well, emotionally, it's a lot, because you know, it's kind of most people in the United States, especially when they sell their home, they're usually purchasing another one and a bigger one and a larger one and a better one. So, you know, selling your home is not usually such a unique process in the United States, but selling your home to then go and fulfill the Great Commission and to move to another country that's not your country of origin is pretty different. And right. So we were like, okay, we're making this leap and we're taking this bound and we're getting out of our comfort zone again, like we had done in 2015. And purely just because we felt like God wanted us to do that. I mean, it really didn't make a lot of sense on paper why we should make that move, but spiritually and just trying to be obedient to God, that's what we felt like we were supposed to do. So I remember Javi had been here in Honduras in July of, I think it was 2018, maybe, or was it 2019?
2019 in the summer.
In the summer of 2019, one of many of the trips that you guys had taken, and he was here with Sage, of course, and I was working my corporate job in Dallas, and he called me and said, hey, I don't really know how to tell you this, but I think we're supposed to move back here. And, you know, I was at the height of my career. We had the home that we were quite comfortable in. It was the first home we had ever purchased. You know, in all ways and circumstances, we were exactly where we wanted to be. We were in the city we loved. We were in the state that we were all born in, and we had a very comfortable home and a very comfortable lifestyle. And so he made that call and just said, hey, you know, I don't know how to tell you this, but just me traveling here 6 times a year doesn't seem to be what God's asking. I think he's asking us to come back, all of us. And I immediately said, I know, he's been telling me that too. And it wasn't because I necessarily wanted to do that. I just right. literally knew that's what God was asking me to do. And so, you know, and that might sound kind of harsh, or it might not sound that romantic to say that, but it's just the truth. It's just like, I'm comfortable where I am. I have the home that I love, the way that it was created and designed and the colors and all the things. Someone else chose it, and yet it was this as if I had chose it myself. You know, as if I had made every decision, it was exactly how I would have decided it right. to be. But none of those things have ever been all that important to me, but it was comfortable and it was different. But that wasn't my anchor, and that's never been his anchor. And so when he said that, that was my response, was I know, because God had already been telling me the exact same thing. And so just a few months later, I gave my notice at my company. And as soon as we put our house on the market, it sold within days. We had multiple offers and the house sold. And we were thinking, well, we'll put it on the market and maybe it'll sell in 4 months, maybe in six. Who knows, maybe the next year. And whenever it sells, then we'll do that idea. And boom, within days, the house sold. So I was like, okay, God is saying, this is what I want, and move full steam ahead. So all of that to say, that's kind of the recap of how it happened and, you know, selling the home. So we get to Honduras, we get settled, we jump back into all the projects full force. You know, there is a difference between being in country 4 to 6 times a year and being in country every single day in a country that you're not from. So there was a lot of challenges that we had to work through as a family. You know, Spanish is not our first language. English is our first language. Me being home all day is not normal for our family. Being together and working together is not normal for our family. I was used to driving away and going and coming home 8 to 12 hours later, depending on the day. So there was just a lot of dynamics that were just different. And then on top of that, then you add COVID-19, and you know, in the United States, you guys were doing shelter in place. And then here it was a lockdown. So like Javi described, it was on a number system and you had to present that to the police to prove you were allowed to be in circulation that day and allowed to be on the road. And he had a special permission, Sage and I did not. And so it was just very restrictive, very different, just very out of the ordinary in every way you could possibly think of. Especially for me as a person who's very independent and was used to, you know, waking up every morning, you know, tossing the peace sign and coming back at who knows what time. Not ever being able to leave the house was quite odd. It was a lot to take on. We got through that, and you know, Javier and Jorge were able to go out. Jorge's our national director. I'm sure many of you remember his name and hear us talk about him a lot. But they both had the special permission and they were able to go out every day and distribute food. And when it was all said and done, we have distributed over 25,000 pounds of food, which is pretty incredible. And that's not really something that's been, you know, food distribution is not really something that's a focus of our ministry. Usually we try and do sustainable projects and we try and think of long-term solutions to different issues that people face and different challenges. But with the pandemic, it just became obvious that this was something that needed to be addressed, and it needed to be addressed immediately. And because of all of you and the generosity of our friends and our family, and the donations that came in, we were able to go and make those, you know, distributions of the food and be able to pray with people and all those things. So Javier and Jorge were out doing that every single day. And then, like he said, we had the visa restriction. And so we needed to get back to the United States just to be in compliance. With us having worked here for almost 17 years now, we don't want to do anything to jeopardize our invitation here. So we wanted to make sure we're staying in compliance, because we have all collectively, you know, you and Gina and Javi and myself and really everyone that invests here at Connect Global and contributes and gives with us, all this has been something that we've all done together. And so we don't want to jeopardize 17 years of an investment to be out of compliance with a visa. And so we knew, okay, we need to leave the country and, you know, be in compliance, and we'll return, you know, hopefully a week or two later and all will be normal. And you know, we've done that before. We lived here in 2015 and we stayed within compliance and left when we needed to and came back and it was no issue. But as we all know, with the pandemic, things have been quite different. And so then that's where us being displaced for 7.5 to 8 months came into play, with just a suitcase each and kind of couch surfing. And, you know, it was just a very strange dynamic, and it was very emotional because it's like, God, you asked us to give up all of these things and to sacrifice and to be obedient. And then you bring us back to the place you told us to leave. And yet we're back, but we don't have any of the other things, any of the creature comforts or the resources or any of those things at our disposal. So it was definitely, I think, a learning opportunity. I think we had a lot of spiritual growth during that time, a lot of seeking God and just saying, okay, what are you trying to show us? How can we grow? And, you know, what can we take away from this? Because we don't want it to be wasted time. And so I don't feel like it was. I think that there was a lot of spiritual work that was done within us internally. And thank God, eventually, at the end of January of this year, we were able to return.
You know, you talked about the quarantines, and I remember those early days, getting the reports from you guys. Like you described the difference here in the United States, we had shelter in place. So it's, you know, stay home, but you can run to the grocery store, kind of get some groceries, make sure you're wearing your mask. And You could tell a real difference here. In the early days, there were not very many people on the roads. People were not gathering in churches. People weren't, kids weren't going to school. A lot of businesses, in fact, most businesses, unless they were deemed an essential business, were mandated to close for a period of time. But the quarantine there in Honduras was a little bit different. As you described, you could only leave your home once every 14 days if it was your number. And I know that a lot of the churches that we work with in Honduras, the pastors sort of live in a bivocational situation. So they would work a job. Some are taxi drivers. Some maybe have a business. We have some pastor friends who have their own small business where they're selling Pepsis during the day for, in bulk to restaurants and other businesses. And then the husband and wife also pastor a church. So in those cases, both of their streams of income for that family were eliminated. The business was required to close. No buses, no taxis. Those are huge businesses in Honduras. Most of the stores were closed. I think the grocery stores were only open just a couple of days a week when they would let people in if it was your number. So if you're a pastor, now your church is closed. You can't meet. Your business is closed. You know, if your spouse works, their business is closed. Right. You know, if it's a multi-income family because you've got someone living with you, a relative, kids, whatever, all those businesses just shut down. Right. And so you guys touched on this. Javier, you and Jorge were able to get a legal permission to go out onto the street every day and start distributing food. So in those early days from mid-March until you guys left in early June, you were there, and then certainly Jorge continued that afterwards. But what was going on in those days? How were those visits to, I know we spent a lot of time with pastors, that's why I kind of talked about them a little bit, but just with families, you guys were showing up at a family's door with a bag of food. How was that experience in being able to help people in such a practical way?
Well, I know that it was a blessing. First and foremost, it was a necessary and ultimately, literally people were going without just the basics, just anything to heat up. So I know that it was a blessing, and we were not the only ones. There were many other organizations, there were other churches. We worked in partnership and collaboration with several of them to make the network happen, to actually get around, because there were other times when maybe a church or even another organization had the means to get food. Maybe it was donated. I know Samaritan's Purse was here. USAID was here. There was a couple of other organizations that were giving bulk food to different organizations, but then they didn't have the network. They weren't able to actually get on the road and distribute those items. And so sometimes we were the network, sometimes we were the delivery. At other times we had both the resources because, like we said, your generosity, but also we also then knew, hey, this pastor's network, they're all scattered and they're kind of cut off. And so we would go door to door to door. And really the thing that blessed me and that really changed my heart on a lot of different things was not only seeing the pastors who were, hey, these are the leaders in the community, they're suffering. And so now you know that their people are suffering, but they were still checking on their congregation. They were still going themselves door to door. I remember going on one of the days, one of the pastors, he said that he was basically more or less having individual church services via cell phone, you know, talking to people, still ministering, still trying to really reach out to them, encouraging them. And so we got a chance to take him in our vehicle with an amount of food that we were able to bring to each of his members of his church. And the joy on their face to see their pastor after so many days of not being able to connect, not being able to get into the city, not being able to move around, but seeing the joy on their faces to see their pastor show up to their house, to see, with food, of course. I mean, we had physical resources too, but more than that, it was the relationship that we could see that people had that connection. And I think that's one of the things that we've lost and one of the things that we've all suffered the most in during this pandemic is our physical, emotional, and spiritual relationships with each other.
Yeah.
We were not built to do this life alone. And so that's what I saw most is when we were going out, yes, of course, people were happy and glad to get these food resources because in some instances it would feed a family for a week or 10 days or even 2 weeks, depending on the size of the family. But more than that, it literally made the day to see the physical connection. You know, social distancing and all, we wore masks, we were very safe and careful, but just being a physical presence, saying you're not alone, you haven't been forgotten. You know, people were telling us at times, man, I literally just prayed last night because I didn't know when food would show up. I didn't know how we were gonna make it through the week, and then you showed up. Now, it's not about us. It's not about what we did. It's about our obedience, and it's about what God provided through us. But it was that physical connection to something spiritual. It was something like a reminder that God was still here. God was still able to support and able to provide some things. And so now, of course, that it's been a year, you know, we're coming up on basically a year of having that level of lockdown. Some things have changed. Some people are back at work. Some people are coming back into the city, and people are able to move around a little bit more freely. They're still concerned, and the infrastructure here for the hospitals are still doing their best. They're doing very diligent work to make sure that they're keeping some of the coronavirus numbers down. But it's a blessing because people literally went without pay. They went without their salary. They went without resources for almost a year. I mean, you've got to think about it. If any one of us, and some of us have, I know that some of you have lost a job, or you've lost a family member that was providing. And so it's a stark reality when you see something like that in mass. You know, of course, life is full of sad things and life is full of loss and tragedy. But to me, what's been so sad about this time period is that it's literally everywhere. It's like in every country, in every city, in every state. You cannot go on Facebook one day without finding someone who's lost a partner or lost a father or lost a brother or a sister. You can't go to a church or tune into a church without somebody mentioning a loss within that church community. Here in La Ceiba, we can't go to one neighborhood that has not been affected by loss and by deep
devastation.
I mean, 8 months of quarantine and 8 months of pandemic with two major, you know, category 4, category 5 hurricanes back to back. It's just been a mess. And so we are privileged to be able to be in a place where we can continue to still bless people. We can continue to still be that answer to prayer to so many people in this city. and really around the world, because there's certain things that because of our friends that have given and have truly partnered with Connect Global, you know, we're able to touch so many places around the globe. But it's not only just with the physical, it's with spiritual help. It's with that, you know, I'm here with you. Whatever I have, you have. Whatever I can give to you, I'm of course going to give to my fellow, you know, neighbor. And so it's been tough. I mean, there's no two ways around it. None of us have been unaffected. I don't think anyone watching this or anyone listening to this has not been in a place, I don't think, that has been completely unaffected by this worldwide pandemic. But the cool thing is that when we're together, when we reach out to one another, when we actually reach out to our neighbors and love one another, we can do a lot. We can do a lot for our fellow human, fellow, you know, brothers and sisters. And so that's been the cool thing, is that we just get to be a part of so many good things going on here.
Yeah, I think that's great. I love that from the earliest days, our mindset, our ideology in Connect Global, and really this is the Kingdom of God ideology, is that we're a family, that we're a team, that we're working at this together. As you guys have said, there are people who are watching this, you know, video podcast or listening to this podcast who have been with us on the field, who have financially partnered with the ministry, who have prayed for us, you know, hours and hours and hours, and are as much a part of this team as anyone else. And it really takes all of that connection. You know, one of the things I'm so proud of, and you mentioned this earlier, is that we've invested in relationships over these last 17 years with people in Honduras. Jorge comes to mind because we literally met Jorge on our very first trip there. And so we've just walked through life together for 17 years. And Pastor Naun and Pastor Allen and so many people, you know, and their families, and so many people that we look back and we're like, man, we've known these people for, you know, 4, 5, 6, 10, 15, and 17 years. And so when you guys were there, okay, now this is our home, and then you had to come out because of the visa situation, which then stretched into multiple months with, you know, travel restrictions and hurricanes and things like that. Jorge and Yaneth, Jorge's wife, were there on the ground. And we have to say this because none of the ministry activity ended. You know, as you said before, nothing stopped.
Right.
You know, the food distribution continued. The care at the maternity house we're going to talk about continued, and everything kept going. And we, you know, the four of us, the three of us on this call and Gina, have all commented about the work of God in Jorge and Yaneth's life and their own personal growth and their own development, and just how proud we are of them. Because in a critical, critical moment, and in a very difficult time, in a very difficult situation, they have continued the work. There's work, obviously, that we're doing here in the United States. So it's not like part of our team's working, part of our team is not working. We each just are all doing the various different things. But talk about that a little bit, because you guys are right there with Jorge and Yaneth. You are cultivating a special relationship because now you're living in the same city together. You were living in the same neighborhood together, you know, in the first part of the time there. And I know they've kind of moved into a different neighborhood, but what happened just functionally and logistically when you guys came to the United States with the food distribution? And we've touched on this, but to give people the reminder, because we may have missed this here in the United States news, but Hurricane Eta, which was the third largest Atlantic hurricane of the 2020 hurricane season, hit Honduras. And then 10 days later, Hurricane Iota, which was the largest Atlantic hurricane of the 2020 hurricane season, hit Honduras. So when a nation's hit by a hurricane, that's bad, but when it's hit by two hurricanes, being the third and first largest hurricanes of the whole season, back to back, while people are still out of job and being displaced, what was going on? What was going on at that time?
Well, that's the thing, is that, of course, Honduras is a beautiful country. It's right in the middle of the Caribbean, in Central America. A lot of people come here for tourism to, you know, enjoy some of the things that are the natural beauties here. And with that, of course, with any place that has a similar description, they're also susceptible to those summer storms, something like a hurricane and tropical depressions and things like that. So they're not necessarily new to that. But of course, when you get the third and largest storms of any season of any year, and I think you can probably go back and see that they're probably two of the most powerful storms maybe in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
When you get those hitting, you know, one place back to back, so close together in a place that's already been so impacted, the infrastructure here was already being pushed to the limits, hospitals and first responders and everybody's being pushed to the limits already because of COVID, it was devastating. You know, you had massive amounts of flooding because some of the lowlands, some of the areas around rivers and some of the places were completely inundated with water. Just minutes from here, there's a bridge that connects us to really the rest of the city. And it's a major thoroughfare for this part of the country. The bridge got overswelled with water and the pressure actually literally took out half the bridge. So the midsection of the bridge literally just got washed away. There's other places.
You drive up, huge gap, and then the other side of the bridge on the other side, right?
Yes.
I mean, you can't.
No.
We drove by there the other day. We're talking about maybe a 50-foot section of the bridge completely washed away. Like, wow. It's like a completely different, it changed the landscape. I mean, there's parts of the river that we've now seen since being back here that you can tell the river changed the course that it was on previous years because there was just so much water, that the water just literally forged even some new, you know, a new direction. So, of course, the bridge got taken out, some other things in the city, which were also flooded. Are in disrepair or completely gone. People's homes were swept away. I mean, you're talking about not like my house was flooded, not like we got a roof leak. I'm telling you, there were people here whose homes are no more, like they were gone. And so even that first drive-in from the airport when we came back into the country this year, just seeing tents or tarps being strewn about the entire way from the airport all the way into the next city, people living in the middle of the road, trying to get, you know, during the storm, they tried to get to the highest point. So that's literally the middle of the road. And so they have just stayed there. Other places, I mean, I'm telling you, some houses were to the roof in water. So not like water came in and you had water damage and, you know, now they're trying to fix it. Like people were sitting and standing on their rooftops being rescued. And so this was a devastating thing to see two back-to-back Category 4 and 5 storms at an already decimated time in Honduras's history.
Right.
But a lot of people really rallied, a lot of churches, a lot of organizations, a lot of U.S. Input continued to come in different ways. I know a lot of teams, I mean, Honduras is actually very welcoming to missionaries and to church groups. And in years past, I mean, you could probably, there's thousands of people that will come and generously give their time and their support here. We've been the recipients of 50 to 60 to 100 team members at any given year, and 2020 shut that down. And so in the middle of a crisis, in the middle of two huge tropical storms, hurricanes, you just had a complete shutdown of people coming in to aid and to support.
Yeah.
But the amazing, beautiful thing is that so many people were still helped. So many people still felt the effects of generosity. So many people still felt the effects of major organizations and other churches and groups still sending support. Even some of the American military, the U.S. military that are stationed in this part of the world, were doing rescue missions, and they were doing food distribution, and they were doing services like protection for different places. And And so we were a part of some of those distributions. We were a part of some of those things, that aid that was going out. But the great thing is too, that our normal operations never never felt the effects of it. We never stopped for 1 minute. So Jorge and Yaneth being able to take our Toyota literally over the river, through the woods, and to somebody's grandmother's home to distribute food, to take water, to take mattresses. We stacked up the Toyota Prado. Jorge and their team stacked the Toyota Prado with mattresses one day and took those out just so that somebody had something soft to lay on because their home had been taken away. But they were able to get to places that other organizations, that other churches just weren't able to. Of course, with a priority of everyone's a priority during that time. With two hurricanes and a pandemic, everybody's at like red level. Right. So it's not like, okay, well, somebody chose not to go here or they chose not to go here. Everybody's in need. Everybody's in a situation in which they're wanting, needing, and have no way of getting support unless somebody goes to them and gets to them. And so it was really great to see the level of leadership that our national director and also our maternity home director, his wife, Yaneth, showed during that time, because they rallied the troops, they brought the teams together, they worked within the restrictions to get things done. They were able to continue distributing food all the way through the hurricane. We've got pictures and videos of them, like I said, going through the river, and he broke out the rubber boots and made it through miserable terrain to make sure that he could get to the people that were essentially being forgotten and being cut off because of the massive amounts of flooding. And so there's certain things where there's just stories of people coming on horseback and wading through the river, waist deep water to get to some of our distribution points. But we made the connection. We were able to make the connection because Jorge and Yaneth and the team here, through thick and thin, really kept to the commitment and to the promise that we made to people. Hey, if we have something to give, we're going to continue to make our way to you, and we're going to continue to give.
And I think it's worth mentioning, because I know that I've seen a lot online and just from different people and, reading news articles. There's kind of a theme that says we're all in this together, especially a lot of what I'm seeing from the United States. Like, we're all in the same boat. We're all in this together. And I think that in a lot of ways, that's true. A lot of people are going through very difficult times. Like we said, this is a global issue. This is not just specific to the United States or to Honduras. But I do think it's worth mentioning that what is unique here, and not something we could say is common in the United States, is the fact that there's a large percentage of people earning $1.90 a day, and that was pre-pandemic and pre-hurricane, when they were actually allowed to go to work. And there's another misconception that gets floated around a lot that gets brought to our attention, where people say, so they live on $2 a day, but everything's like way less expensive there, right? It's kind of, it's kind of comparable. Like, if they lived here, they would get more, but the expenses would be comparable, right? And it's like, no, that's not accurate at all. The cost of a vehicle is the same here or more. The cost of groceries here are the same, or in many cases, more. The cost of fuel, if you want to put gas or diesel in your car, it's more. The cost of electricity, about 3 times the price of what we're used to paying in the United States. So to think, they're living on $2 a day, but it's comparable to what their expenses are, is just not accurate. It might make us feel better to believe that and to tell ourselves that, but it's not the reality. And so the percentage of people that were living on $1.90 a day here, who then weren't even allowed to go and earn that, are in desperate need of some of the basics that we just don't even think about. We don't have to think about if we're gonna have water today. That's just a reality. We know we have the resources to give ourselves clean water. We know we can turn on our faucet and water is gonna come out. We know we can buy a bottle of water or a 5-gallon jug of water, and that we have that available to us at any given time. that's not the same for every person here. And so we know that that's not specifically unique to Honduras only. We know there's other countries that suffer and are definitely in a similar boat like that. But for us in the United States to sometimes take an approach that alleviates the guilt or the pressure or the tension, I'm okay with reapplying that, because the need is real and it's not a different cost of living and it's not less expensive and it's not easier to live on $1.90 a day here than it is in the United States of America. And so, you know, I know that we oftentimes, the three of us and the four of us, Gina, we always like to share the good news because it's exciting and people get excited about that and they want to hear the good news. And we have so many good things to share. But I also think that it's important that we share the reality of what people face. And so there are people here, there are mothers here, there are students here, there are people that work very hard to provide for their families, and they still never, it's not that they don't get ahead, they don't even get really a start. They're literally working in the day to buy the food they're gonna eat that day, and then that's it. And there's people who don't even have work to do that. And so I just think that it's important that we paint an accurate picture. You know, yes, people have been so generous, and that's amazing. But that's because they have the ability to be generous. And it's not that we discount the fact that many people that give to Connect Global and to other organizations, we don't discount the fact that they're giving sacrificially, because we know that there's many people that do give to Connect Global specifically that are not giving because they're millionaires or because they make six figures or because they just have a disposable income, but they're literally deciding, this is how I'm going to invest the resources that I have, that God gave me and what's in my hand. And so they've made conscious decisions and they make intentional decisions to say, this is how I'm going to use the funds that I have, because I know people are suffering in a way that I've never suffered, or I know people are suffering in a way that God didn't intend. And so, you know, yes, there are people that have wealth and they have disposable income, and praise God, give it here. We're good seed, we're good soil. But there's also a lot of people that give to Connect Global and they give to other organizations that are making a conscious effort to say, hey, this isn't necessarily easy for me and this isn't necessarily comfortable for my family, but we've decided that this is what we're supposed to do. And they make that decision and they make that choice and they're helping hundreds and thousands of families here. And to me, that's what we should focus on and we should celebrate. And when we're walking into someone's home, if you can call it that, when we're walking into someone's dwelling, where they stay, where they sleep, because that's more accurate, because when you think of a home and you're coming from the context of the United States, a lot goes into your mind. But a lot of these people are staying in a dwelling. They're staying under a shelter. They're staying under some sort of tarp or some sort of roof. And this was even before the hurricanes. When we're walking into these dwellings, we're not saying we think we're the savior and we think we just saved your life and saved your day because we brought a 15-pound bag of food. We're just saying, if ever I were in this situation, I hope someone would bring me a 15-pound bag of food. And so I want to give this to you because I'm a child of God and you're a child of God. And God told me to bring this to you. And so we don't have a complex of thinking that we're the savior. We don't have a complex of thinking, hey, we did this for you, so show us your gratitude. There's nothing like that that exists within this organization. We just know that God has blessed us and he's given us things and he's given us resources that require that we do what we're doing. And so that's why we do it. That's the only reason that we're doing what we do, not because we're great, we're not superhuman, we're not more equipped for this type of work than someone else. It's literally that God said, you're my child, and so is she. Okay, yeah. I just so happen to have a little bit more in my fridge today than she does, so I'm required to make sure that she has that too. And as long as we're in that position, that's gonna be our response. And so I want to make sure that we focus on that as well, because yes, we have so much to share that's good and positive, but the only reason why we're able to say we shared 25,000 pounds of food with someone is because there were people that were in need of that food.
Right.
And so I think it's very important that we emphasize that.
I think that's great, because the reality is, and I think we all know this instinctively, and I know we have discussed this before, is that generosity is not predicated by always what we would call an amount of abundance.
Right.
Right. It's not that I have a lot of stuff, or I have a lot of money, or I have a lot of just extra laying around, and so I can then be generous. In fact, usually it works the other way around.
Right.
Usually people find themselves being grateful for what they have.
Right.
Whether we would measure that as a lot or a little.
Yeah.
And out of that gratitude comes generosity. And the Bible talks about then reciprocating the blessing. And we're not saying, well, give to get. Right. And so the beauty that you just described, Danielle, is that we know people who partner with us financially from the United States and from Honduras, for that matter,
right,
who by any measurable, we wouldn't say, wow, they're rich, or they just have this extra surplus.
Right.
And the same thing is true of the people that oftentimes we've given bags of food to in Honduras. There have been times they've given to us at the maternity home, or to the moms, or invited us over for a meal in their own home, you know, and shared with us.
Right.
And so the reality is that generosity is oftentimes predicated by a sense of gratitude. And as we focus on being grateful for what God's done in our life, it gives us an opportunity to be generous with somebody, whether we've got, you know, $1.90 today, or we've got $190,000 today, whatever that measurable is,
right,
it's totally unrelated to generosity. And so we, just to echo what you were saying, we so appreciate the people who have partnered with us, who have said, this may not be an easy gift for me to give right now, but I'm gonna do it.
Right.
Because I'm grateful for what God's done in my life, and I'm gonna practice generosity.
Hey, thank you so much for watching. If you'd like to learn more, connect with us at goservechange.com.